Once more, we fight the snowdrifts, up to our knees, uphill all the way, despite what our children have been told. To reach the monastery, to learn more of the lessons of Kalis, I now turn you over to the clerics who will take us through the final chapters of the Pakbak. Take it away, clerics.
Yes, so just to set the stage for you, we have read through almost the entire Pakbak. And when last we were together, we had just discussed Kalesh's victory over Molor and sending him on to the afterlife. And I did want to touch on the fact that we are now about to go into the part of the Pakbak that talks about Kalis departing. And this is an issue for some sects of historians and followers of Kalis, because there are many stories that take place between his victory over Molor and the time that he departs. There's many legends of things that he did, that he took his Batleth and he plowed all of the fields of his father's land in a single night, that he fought and defeated the Serpent of Zal, and that there were other great deeds that he did. And we'll talk about those some other time when we talk about the Apocrypha. But whether or not there was a great deal of time in between these stories in the Pakbak, or if this follows immediately after, again, that's a matter of debate. And that's probably outside of the scope of what we wanted to get into today. We just want to look at the material.
It might not be so far outside, but I think maybe let's read Canto 1, and then I'll say why it's not outside. I think Canto 1 actually directly addresses that if you read it carefully.
So, as you recall, Kalis went into the afterlife in body. He didn't die to do this. He physically went to Grethor to bring back his brother and father, to give them an opportunity to help him redeem the family name. That did not set very well with Fechlar, whose duty it is to ensure that nobody leaves Grethor. So Fechlar and Kotor, of course, the ferryman on the River of Blood, pursued Kalis back to the Land of the Living, and he struck a deal with them and said, look, this is a matter of honor, and I will return with you if you will allow us to fulfill this debt of honor. And Kotor and the Fechlari agreed. In fact, they assisted in that battle. And so they sieged the center of power and brought down the armies of Molor, but Kalis himself fought Molor Klingon to Klingon, so that no one could say that Kalis only won because he had the forces of Grethor behind him. It was an honorable combat, and that's where we're at this point.
You might want to explain to the listeners the difference between Fechlar and the Fechlari.
Well, there is debate over what the Fechlari are. It has been implied, well, obviously the name implies that they are related in some way to Fechlar. But does that mean literally demons? Or does that mean some Klingon army that took the name demons? You know, that seems entirely the demon squad or something like that. But in the Pakbak, it is specifically said that the honored dead came back with Fechlar and fought alongside Kalis. Now, they are not referred to as the Fechlari. In fact, that term, the Fechlari, is not used in the Pakbak proper. I have sort of confabulated the two because that term does come from extraneous material, from the Apocrypha. So I've kind of allowed my own personal bias to slip in there. So I do appreciate you calling that out and pointing it out so that I don't speak as fact what is actually just my opinion.
Or in my case, I try to point out to the speaker something that might need to be explained to the audience.
Yes, and very honorable of you. I appreciate that. So yes, that's that is the distinction, and we'll talk more about the Faklari in another topic when we do start talking more about the Apocrypha and the extraneous information. But yes, that brings us to the Impact Book. Janshi?
Kledrup Kalish. Oh, Kalish, 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 Kanjit Puklod, Klingon Vav, Bival Ejbiyoch, Bikrapta, Vaj Molor Chochta, Kalish, Ejkuv Tirme, Arpu Mumedaj, Tatmedaj Je, Kotnosh Tukme, Muvchukmoch, Kalish, Ej Chachvad Bat, Chutme Nob, Klingon Wovodlech, Moj Shurlu. O Kalish, 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 Kanjit Puklod, Klingon Vav, Bival, Ejbiyoch, Bikrapta, Chetachvish Val, Kalish, Ejyoch, Krapka, Klingon Tukme, Ejyime Dun Chav, Rik, Kotnosh Dak, Krap, Rintach, Etshov, Kalish, Kotor Lijbe. O Kalish, 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 Kanjit Puklod, Klingon Vav, Bival Ej Biyoch, Bikrapta, Chu De Mash Ej Kashtach Vish Ram, Nuchme Daj, Might Luch Daj, Niv Je, Yir Kalish, Kled De Kuv Mochmech, Veng Chech Dak, Lutla, Shad Laut Nuv Puk. O Kalish, 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 Kanjit Puklod, Klingon Vav, Bival, Ejbiyoch, Bikrapta.
Again, this is a responsorial between the listener and the lore singer. So all. O Kalish, 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 son of Kanjit, Klingon father, wise and brave, you have succeeded. The lore singer replies, and so Kalish slew the tyrant Molor and taught the people the ways of honor by his words and his honorable deeds. Kalish united the tribes of Kotnosh and provided them with the law of honor. He was crowned emperor of the Klingon Empire. O Kalish, 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 son of Kanjit, Klingon father, wise and brave, you have succeeded. The Klingon tribes flourished once more, and many great victories were made during Kalish's reign of wisdom and bravery. Then the time came when Kalish saw that his work on Kotnosh was done. He did not forget Kotar. O Kalish, 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 son of Kanjit, Klingon father, wise and brave, you have succeeded. On the night of the new moon, Kalish gathered his weapons and his finest suit of armor. Thousands followed him to the edge of the city to bid him farewell. O Kalish, 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 son of Kanjit, Klingon father, wise and brave, you have succeeded. So this is exactly what I was talking about when I was saying that how much time is not specified. It does talk about some of his deeds, uniting his people, teaching them the ways of honor, and becoming the emperor of the unified Klingon Empire. But it doesn't say he reigned for hundreds of years. It doesn't say, you know, he did this all in a day. So whenever you leave something vague, you can believe that the believers will find ways to debate assumptions. And that's something a cleric has to deal with. Any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely in the Klingon, it says that, I'm trying to figure out how to translate this. It says while his rule of them was ongoing. Mm-hmm. So the English says during Kallus's reign.
Sure.
And the Klingon aspect used here on this verb is an aspect means it goes on and on. Now that could be it goes on and on for 5 minutes. It's true. But the implication is that there's an extended period of time in which an end to his reign cannot be seen. Of course, it does eventually end, but I would say that the Klingon, and even the English, many great victories were made during Kallus's reign, really implies that there was quite a bit of time where he was allowed to continue his reign as an ongoing part of his work before returning to Kotar.
I tend to agree with you. And again, taking, you know, the Apocrypha, it's kind of hard to have any beliefs regarding the actual happenstance of the Apocrypha, the battle with the Serpent of Zol, for example, and say time was not required for that. But some of the debate that I have heard was, well, it says that he taught them the ways of honor. He did that right then and there in the battle against Molor, and he set the standard, and that was it. It was done. And his reign was as long as this battle took place. Now, again, I don't agree with that particular assessment. I do agree with what John Shi just said. I'm just saying this is one of the arguments that I've heard made about this. For all the unity we like to believe that Kalesh brought about, there is still a great deal that Klingons disagree about.
Well, if you try to take the Bok-Bok more as a allegorical tale, then the time came when Kalesh saw that his work was done. That implies in most allegory that it took a while.
Yeah.
To get it done. So
yeah, and I think that is something that every Klingon has to struggle with. Allegory versus a literal interpretation. There is value in viewing the Pakhbah both ways, honestly. Taking it literally, you get some great wisdom and great inspiration. But if it strains credulity, then there's no reason you shouldn't take it as allegorical and focus on the truth behind it. Maybe we're going a little deeper than the surface reading that I wanted to get into with this at this stage in it. But this is exactly what it means to study the Pakhbah, in my opinion.
Or any other allegorical text.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of which we'll get into in the future. But let's continue, unless anyone had anything else they wanted to say about Canto 1. Okay, on to Canto 2.
I just want to remind everybody as we begin Canto 2 that thousands, many thousands of people had followed him to the edge of the city.
Correct.
In order to honor him at his departure.
Correct.
Kalesh mu'me khav rech tlingan tlich et yakau pewuv er. Kotar vimuv, Kordutwij vimuv, Katlit kuv yipab, Ej tirme lij bolij chur, Shakshub shuvwit krup yikau, Tatme daj bokau dit shuchem jaj, Mutme daj bojat dit shuval jaj, Not tatme daj, Mutme daj jok. Bolidge judge.
Kalesh's last words. Remember forever that you are Klingons. You need no one but yourselves. I will go and join Kotor and be with my kin. Follow the honor in your spirit. And if you should lose your way, remember the young warrior from Sakhsob. May you remember his deeds with pride. May you recite his words with wisdom. May you forever be unforgettable. Wow. That is intense. So let's break this down. Kalesh is obviously speaking about himself, the warrior from Sakhshub, right? But he talks about himself in the third person, and he refers to the young warrior. So in a way, he's almost not talking about himself as he stands here today. He's talking about the warrior who united them previously, the Kalesh who fought against Molor. He's actually speaking to the legend he knows that's been created, right? He knows that that warrior spirit, that those stories, those songs that are sung are what are going to endure after he is gone. And he's telling everyone, look to that. That is what will sustain you. In a way, he's saying, if you do lose your way, remember the lessons that were learned already. Remind yourself so that you don't have to go through the same mistakes of the past, that we don't need to have another Molor in the world. Let's learn this lesson. And I like to think he's saying, remain Klingon and always be unified. And I think we can all agree that throughout history, that is a lesson that Klingons tend to forget and need to be reminded of. Thoughts?
Seems like you covered it well.
I would argue that Kalesh covered it well, and I'm just reiterating it. But yes, I agree. Okay, then. We'll continue on to Canto 3.
Kalesh Kherbat. Mu'mevam Krav Jat. Kalesh Lijlach Bor Par. Pau pa kotar bik ruj, kotar vad laita ej bat pab kalish. Jat et mevdi nuvpu mej moch rach, rat bet naldaj lukara nech, yat lukara puklod wat ditch kengle, ku daj yaj chu rach, kalish vad matvek nob. Vanchuk Lukara Joch Kalesh Je Ej Cheme Pim Rosh Ka Kodak Rom Ka Chach Ej Netebcha Shuv Chach Et Shov Lukara Ka Kovam Dun Lau Retor Dun Push Dach Wanit Pot Tarlu Tik Du Daj Duk Kumech Kalesh, ma vek cha etme job, por hoch wa ek, ka tlab moch wa ek, klingan choch lurintach, iu tek mech tlaidaj lo lukara, ej ka kodak pau chach et mek mech, kotar vad jach, kotar, 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 Du rosh shuv witle retor leng jilaita ej bat jipabta vaj chordanish rech bat shuv tach jaj rach kalish vad jach ej beidaj lukimmo yukdak rach tach bor choch klingan e chom ka choch kotnosh nuvpu loj mit me dak shuvwepu chem kich mech kalish lijlachbor par retor cher.
The Hekbat of Kalesh. These were the last words of Kalesh the Unforgettable before Kotar's barge sailed in. Kalesh kept his word of honor to Kotor. After his last words, all were sent away but his wife Lukara. Lukara, pregnant of their firstborn son, understood what had to be done and gave him the Mevek. Lady Lukara and Kalesh, they said their goodbyes, and Lukara knew they would meet again, fighting side by side in an underworld more glorious than Grethor ever was. Now the time had come. Kalesh impaled his heart with the two blades of the Mevek, one blade to extinguish the physical life, one blade for freeing the soul. The Klingon's transition was complete. Lukara wiped the blood on her sleeve and cried out Kotor to announce his arrival in the realm of the dead. Kotor, Kotor, Kotor. Your warrior approaches you. He is bound for the underworld. I have kept my word of honor, and so should you. Let endless battle and honor await him. All of Khotnosh tremble once more, for every Klingon on the planet followed her cry for Kalesh. And so Kalesh the Unforgettable returned to Grathor to meet proud warriors at its gate. So first, the one thing that I've noticed that when I talk about this story at the Federation Starfleet Academy, because one of the things that I do is teach Klingon culture to the Feddies, I have to explain to them the concept of the Hekbat, and exactly what the purpose of the Mevek is. To my understanding, there isn't currently an analog for this tradition among the humans, but if they are students of their own history, they know of times where ritual suicide was used for the purpose, for honorable purposes, particularly in ancient Japan. There was I forget how it translates. Can you help me out with this, Janshi? The Japanese tradition,
seppuku, which means cutting the belly, or also we say harakiri, which is belly cutting. So the same thing.
Yes, I'm lucky. I remember the current English words, let alone their older languages. So thank you for that.
But if we go back, you even find this in Greek culture, ancient Greek
absolutely.
Culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. There was an ancient Roman culture where it was less spiritual and more a sense of duty that one might fall on one's sword, is how they called it, if they were ordered to do so for the purpose of their leaders, or for in honor to the state or something like that. So this isn't a completely foreign concept to the humans, but this
killing in battle too.
Absolutely. It is a way to restore one's honor. And one needs to consider what Kalesh is doing here. He has made a promise to return to the land of the dead with Kotor. The first time he went to Grathor, he went physically in body. He was alive at the time. The reason he did that, of course, was because his intent was to return. Now he is fulfilling his obligation to Kotor, and he will not be returning physically in body. So, in other words, the trip to the afterlife has to be the true trip to the afterlife, in death, in other words. And he is not going to wait for death. He is not going to wait until he dies of old age. He is not going to necessarily die in battle. Now is the time, and therefore he will take on the duty of performing the Hekbat, because this is the chosen time. And this is a great description, as all of us here know, this is exactly how the Hekbat is performed. You have someone else, either your firstborn son, in this case his spouse, who brings you the blade. After the act is done, cleans the blade on their sleeve and returns it to its resting place. And I do love the explanation that the Mevek has two blades, and it is said that one extinguishes life from the body, the other releases the spirit. I have been met with young warriors who are confused by this duality. Well, does not extinguishing life release the spirit? Again, I think you have to look at this allegorically. I think that another part of the, if we think back on the logic of two blades, it certainly does speak to the Breklal. You know, if it's not easy to kill a Klingon, it takes two blades if you're going to do it right,
especially
right?
If you have two hearts.
Well, yeah, it is entirely possible to take serious a cardiac wound and survive, and that would entirely defeat the purpose of the Hechbat, right? So
gotta get it right the first time.
Well, you know, I mean, this is a big deal, right? So you don't want to mess it up. So you're absolutely right. Did I cover it all, Janshi?
Most of it. I want to add something to the discussion of the two blades. Mm-hmm. And the 2 points I would like to make are
I see what you did there. 2 points.
The two blades do, of course, give more assurance of success. And perhaps originally it was really for practical reasons and not spiritual reasons. But and I will add to that, that one blade can often be perfectly good at accomplishing this task.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the two blades are, you know, serve a symbolic purpose more than anything else. That as it says here, one to release the body and one to release the soul. The question isn't, but wouldn't the same thing happen with a single blade? Yes, but having two blades gives it a symbol and a meaning that is makes it ritual rather than run of the mill.
It is my understanding, and correct me if my impression is wrong, because I know that you know this better than I do, Janshi, but the human tradition that we talked about, the seppuku, their method involves a single blade, but it is inserted and drawn across. And I think there was some very elaborate cutting method that they used that accomplished what I think was simpler to perform with the double pointed blade. Is my understanding of that correct?
So my understanding of it, mm-hmm, is that there are two blades. You're going to smack yourself in the forehead in a second.
Okay.
One is drawn across the belly.
Okay.
Straight across horizontally and then turned upward. So it's supposed to make two cuts. And the second blade is held by your second to cut off your head before your body falls.
For what purpose?
To make sure the actions of the first cuts were sufficient.
Only a human would have to have that extra step. A Klingon gets it done himself.
Again, there may have been that practical purpose, but the stated spiritual purpose is that for your body to fall over still intact is not the release that you need.
That I see.
You should, because a cut across the belly does not kill you instantly.
No, it's set up.
You have to sit. Well, even that doesn't actually kill you. You haven't hit any major blood vessels, so you bleed out very slowly. However, there's a chance you will faint. There is a chance that you will just lose strength. And so a second stands nearby with a sword ready to cut off your head before you can collapse to the ground.
So there are two blades, and in that regard, but the two blades are wielded by two different individuals in the human tradition.
It's different.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, it's not the same thing, but there are two blades.
I do see that. That's very interesting. I wasn't clear on that fact, but this is why throughout the history of human Klingon interaction, We continue to learn more about the humans and realize that they're more like us than I think we tend to give them credit for. We could certainly talk about history and the Battle of Narendra III and so forth, but they are an honorable species. And,
well, some of them are honorable. You have to admit, some of the Klingons are dishonorable.
I was just going to say, let's be fair. You can say the same of Klingons as well. You're absolutely right about that, Janshi. But that's why we're here, isn't it? Okay.
So I do want to add a couple extra notes.
Sure.
One is this word Cherbat.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ancient word and wouldn't be a word that would be created using modern Klingon,
mm-hmm,
but it carries over from ancient times. And This is, I believe, the first mention we have of it in any ancient materials. Mm. I am not going to claim that this is the first time someone killed themselves for honor, but this is the instance that created the ritual as we know it. And part of that comes in, there's a change in what it means to go to the afterlife after this.
Yes.
Though we haven't reached that part of the story yet. But after this one particular ritual suicide, the meaning of ritual suicide sort of changes forever based on what we're going to learn later in the story.
Yep, exactly right. And I'm not going to say I had this debate, but I have had this discussion regarding, is the Hegbat something that Kalish created, or was it a practice that was already in existence that he was continuing on? And the point you just made, I have made as well, that whether or not it started with Kalish, the meaning of it, as we understand it now, started with Kalish. He either started it from scratch, or he started something new in relationship to it. Yes, absolutely right. Okay, so Canto 4.
Shuto vokor chenmoch kotar, pau dit her duj, der dak kam kotar, kotar ret dak kam kanjit morat je, muv chukka vav puklod pu je, iu bik tik dak retor leng, e char kalish, mu meidaj kauta kalish, ach. Kam chi dak light ta kotar edge pab ta je pa ko el duj och vad shuto vokor pong kotar och nud kalish edge chem nar kach a rach luta bor och shuto vokor e shuv e mev de klutmech shopmech lopmech. Pacher shuvwipu, doj chalkach daj vechme chut, pa elde duj, iu chik piu kar piu je, lular luchu, shuvot shutot vokor botltak, petvil jok chutach, kuvbor ej valbor tik du tik, chronbor nuch. Tik du vad, juch moj retor, puj wit vad nuv, kuv cha vad je dak moj. Pa kre cha choch kotar veklar je, kuv chuk boch ka choch, kuv chuk ngok chuk shan chuk, retor ver duj, shuto vokor loj mit me. El duj, kalish van chutlu, ej nad chutlu, uk a lutiv, molor luchar bor shuvipu, kalish kordu je, rindi uk a doit kalish, mut medaj, tat medaj je kao, ej kashtach vish wej jaj kong, kalish vemmoch. Kotar ghor kim nech.
Kotor creates shtovokor. When the barge of the dead came, Kotor stood at its helm, Khanjit and Morath by his side. The three were reunited once more. They set sail over the blood river to Grathor, or so Kalish thought. Not only Kalish remembered his words, Kotor also met his part of the arrangement at Kamchi. The barge entered a new underworld. Kotor named it Shtovokor. Kalish looked at it with great pride. Shtovokor, a mighty stone castle, where warriors returned after battle to drink, eat, and celebrate. Its towers grand, the space infinite. The smell of blood wine and gach filled the barge upon entering. At the center of Shtovokor, the ancient hearts of honor and wisdom beat steadily and strong. Grathor was now the home of the hearts of doubt and fear, the place for the weak and dishonored. Hotor and Fechlar cooled their rage there, slaying spirits with no honor. No honor, no hope, no future. The barge went through Grathor into the gates of Stovokor. Kalesh was given a hero's welcome. There was a feast with his kin and the warriors that took part in the great battle against Molor. After the feast, Kalesh felt tired. He looked back on his words and deeds and then slept for 3 days. Kalesh awoke from his sleep by the voice of Kotor calling him to his feet. So here we have the establishment of Stovokor. Part of the agreement was that Kalesh was going to return because he promised he would, but he made Kotor promise as well that there would be some differentiation in the afterlife. A place for the honored dead and a place for the dishonored. And that's how Stovokor came to be, and Kotor put Kalesh in charge of it. I do like the idea, though, that...
He hasn't yet put him in charge of it.
Oh, that's true. That's true. He hasn't. We're getting there.
That's in the next one.
But I do find it... I almost chuckle every time I read this, because it does say he looked back... Basically, it says he looked back on his life. He looked back on his words, his deeds, the things he'd done, and he slept for 3 days. He looked at all the things he did, and he was tired, and he needed to rest. I just think that's brilliant. 3 days enough to rest up for all the things that are attributed to Kalesh? I don't know, but it always just warms my heart to read that. I just think it's quite humorous and appropriate, I think.
It even appears that he might have slept longer had Kotar not woken up.
Good point. You make an excellent point there. I think you have a great point there. I also like the way that the English is translated. Kotor and Fechlar cooled their rage there, meaning in Grathor. It was like all of this time, even though they knew they had an agreement with Kalesh, they were still a little bit angry. But now that everything has been fulfilled, they're like, okay, now we can get down to what we should be doing. And everything was right with the afterlife, so to speak. I always thought that was kind of interesting, too. I don't believe that Fechlar's rage has ever truly cooled, though. What do you think?
I will say that the Klingon is a little less clear. It could mean that they directed their rage elsewhere, but true. I think a traditional translation, a traditional understanding is that their rage was abated for some time, for a small amount of time.
Yeah, I always have read that in the from the perspective of and because you see it earlier on, they're annoyed. And I think that's a huge understatement. They are enraged about the current situation. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. And in a way, they're going into another era where things are different than the way they were. But it's like there is a rightness. Things have been corrected. Things are entering a new equilibrium. And so honor has been served. And that is always a good thing. Just my take on it.
However, having said all that, there is an interesting support for the understanding of their rage was directed elsewhere, because even though it says in the English they cooled their rage, in both the English and the Klingon, it says, and so they went around slaying spirits that had no honor.
Yes.
No honor, no hope, no future. So maybe it isn't that their rage actually disappeared. They just said, okay, we got better places for this rage. Let's go
right.
Place that's honorable.
And that's what I was saying. I never felt that Fechlar's rage ever truly does cool. It also seems to dismiss the dishonored dead out of hand, doesn't it? It's like, I'm angry, and I need to do something with that anger. I'll just slay these souls. It's like, okay. I kind of like that, actually. I think that's exactly how I picture Fechlar. It does seem to imply that both KOTOR and Fechlar are doing this action, when that's never been really my understanding of KOTOR's job here. I never imagine him spending a great deal of time in Grithor itself with Fechlar slaying the dishonored dead. I really did picture him at the helm of his ship for pretty much all of eternity. His job is being a ferryman, basically. Whether that's an honor or a curse, that's open to debate. But I've read this and I've said, well, maybe he does every now and again get off his ship and go slay some souls alongside Fechlar. I don't know. Maybe.
And the next canto will touch on that, but it doesn't say. It talks about them continuing to torture the dishonored, but doesn't say where they do it. So it's possible he does it from his boat.
And one could even argue that just the act of bringing them and delivering them to Fechlar is his role in it. I don't know. Honestly, though, I hope never to find out. I don't ever intend to go to Grithor.
Well, according to this,
you go through Grithor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't get a choice.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I just don't intend to debark there. Anyway, yes, canto 5.
Kaelish vard shutovokor nob kotar. Kaelish lijlachbog par shutovokor dak kavan. Bat beyinta edge bivalta. Bileg lach jilaita edge bat jipabta. Ka kodak. Shuvit pupma chemvad, juch vichenmoch, poop kach a ach wa dui tutlu, avwit with voklach bor with pok, retor da elta, edge lodge mit me vo damejta, ach berik bet mo shoch nech, vaj shuvit wit niv shoch. Vaj shutovokor lojmet da'av ka chem ko lu el ka chiv et dabot lu el ka kuv et dachau kloy me jojdak chachvad dak danob ej chachvad ukha lutivbor danob bik lungash chur klingan ad du koj Joch betchur klingan tiktu. Retor dak mu kledj edj veklar lu kledj. Vav lit lod nit lit je da sham mech. Retor da elmo edj damej mo. Krech choch kapu vaj lu bij lu.
Otor gives Shtovokor to Kaelish. Kaelish, the unforgettable, I welcome you into Shtovokor, for you lived wise and honorable. As you see, I have kept my word. I have built our proud warriors a home in the afterlife. The castle is perfect, although it has but one flaw. We need a trustworthy guard. Since you are the only one who ever entered Grithor and left the gates unharmed, you are my best warrior. Therefore, you will guard the gates of Shtovokor. You will not only keep poor souls from entering the realm of the proud, you will also welcome the honorable. You will offer them a place between these walls and a feast to their liking. The Klingons, with fear in their hearts and water in their veins, will stay in Grithor with me and Fechlar. They will pay for the anger you caused by entering and leaving Grithor in search of your kin. That's interesting. Yeah, it does imply that anger continues, which is probably difficult to say when you've just gone to the effort of creating a new paradigm and being okay with it. But it certainly is part of the process of the creation, right? It is the purpose for the paradigm. So So yes, absolutely. Any thoughts?
It seems pretty well explained.
Yes, I agree.
Who did the monks of Morath think was guarding Stovokor when they resurrected Kalus?
Well, Stovokor was not created yet. It was created at...
No. In the Next Generation episode.
Oh, you mean when Kalus returned?
When they cloned him, yeah.
I don't remember ever having that discussion with anyone before.
Leave it to me to find something you haven't thought of.
Keep in mind, too, there are many imagined stories. This would not be in any way considered to be, any kind of true lore or anything like that. It's all speculative because since Kalesh, no one has died, gone to the afterlife, and returned to describe what it is like. But I think that many Klingons believe or assume that serving under Kalesh in Stovokor is like being a warrior in service to the Empire. And there are different fields of battle. You may serve on a ship in the Black Fleet. You may serve as an infantryman in the field. So there's probably ranks. At least this is what comes from the collective imagination. And if that's the case, certainly there would be a lieutenant that Kalesh would leave in charge if he were to return to the land of the living for a period of time. You know, there certainly is an order of command, so to speak. But again, this is entirely speculation. Unless someone has actually asked Kalesh himself, hey, while you're here, who's in charge of Stovokor? And I don't remember that question ever coming up. At least it didn't in my awareness of it.
It's hard to imagine that first thing Kalesh does when he's given the keys to Stovokor is set up guest relations.
I suppose.
But to increase the size of that wrench, we can also ask who is guarding Grethor while Kotar and Feklar are chasing down Kalesh.
That's true. And I have also had this conversation about the nature of Feklar. And again, this will come up again when we talk about the Fakhiri. But is there more than one of these creatures like Feklar? Does he have lieutenants? Are there multiples? And there are sects that believe that there are. Don't know. Again, I hope to never debark and tour Grethor in the afterlife myself to find out. But that is not a question that I would be prepared to answer at this time. Okay, on to the epilogue.
Bertlam Vaj Cha Ka Kotme Chen Moch Ta Kotar Ej Jaj Me Vam Tach Ru Vam Dach Vang Ta Mo Kalesh Kuv Tir Me Shov Choch Klingan Puk Ej Puk Puk Chaj Vad Lutvam Lujatka Klingan Tir Yepab Kun Kon Char Wipu E Kuv Mo Her Her Yenad Ka Widjet Mech Mashuv Kotmaj Wishachmech Mashuv Ulij Ror Yekoi Bat Pot Lau Yin Pot Push Rij Ket Jarmim Jaj Klingan Shoch Klingan Mach Yekau Ej Bat Yin Yekau Ej Bat Yeher Bat Her Luchur Herluchu.
And so the two ways of afterlife were created by Kotor. And so it is up to this day. Now, by the deeds of Kalesh, every Klingon knows the ways of honor and teaches their children by this tale. Live the Klingon way. History is written by the victors. Celebrate death, for it is honorable. We fight to enrich the spirit and to expand our realm. Listen to the voice of your blood. Honor is more important than life. May your enemies run with fear, for you are Klingon. We are Klingon. Remember and live with honor. Remember and die with honor. For who dies honorable dies
well. That's some powerful, powerful stuff. If you were to sum up the Klingon way in one verse, that would be it, in my opinion. What do you think?
A lot of this one canto contains a lot of the phrases that we use, a lot of the common idioms. I can't think of the right word to use here, but a lot of these are
proverbs
said frequently in, proverbs, mm-hmm. might be a word you could use for
aphorisms.
Aphorisms is good. Yeah. So this one canto contains a lot of the proverbs and aphorisms.
It really is the most quoted portion, I think, of the Pakbats in the common vernacular.
Yeah. So you get things like ulij roh yekoy, listen to the voice of your blood. What else? Bat pot lau yin pot push, honor is more important than life.
Mm-hmm. It causes me to grind my teeth sometimes when I find out that there are some Klingons that quote some of these passages and have not done a thorough study of the Pakbats. And I just shake my head and I go, what has your father done in bringing you up? But I suppose that's why I have the job I have. that's why the clerics teach, I suppose. But I may be too harsh because I feel that even those Klingons that have studied the Pakbats diligently on their own sometimes still have questions. I mean, I would say just our conversations over the past weeks and months is evidence of that. I know everyone here has read the Pakbats many times, and still we had great conversations with a lot of questions. Maybe it's never meant to be understood completely and have all the questions answered. Maybe that's a lifelong pursuit.
Remember, too, that what we've been doing over these past few weeks has offered the listeners the chance to experience the Pakbak from two well-educated people who have studied it their whole careers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And more importantly, that if you found this, as the listener, helpful to your ways of being a Klingon, share it. Send these podcasts to others that they too may learn what is here.
Absolutely. And if you have any questions of your own after the podcast, I don't want Jorn and Judge Jim to have had the opportunity to ask their questions. I'm sure they've asked questions that they already had answers to, but were asking questions that they thought people might want answers to. If you have any questions after this recording, reach out to us. You can reach out to us through CAG.org. If you want to share my YouTube page, Kalesh, a little slip of the tongue there, Kartan, the Klingon cleric on YouTube. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways. Also, highly recommend, and John Shi could certainly point you in the right direction to learn, dig into the Klingon language through the Klingon what is their webpage? Klingon?
KLI.org.
KLI.org, right. Because the best way to learn a culture is to learn the language.
There's also a very good duolingual course on Klingon Hull.
Mm. Yep. Yeah.
Now with pronunciations.
Which is important.
And many of the pronunciations are my voice. And
On the Duolingo?
On the Duolingo course, many of the pronunciations are my voice, but there are also a number of other highly talented speakers doing some of the audio for the Duolingo course.
Yep. Yeah. Anything else I can speak to tonight? That about covers the Pakbats for now, at least our first run through of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, this has been an incredible journey through this work, and I've learned a great deal just by sitting and listening. And I'll tell you what are your thoughts, John?
These two have much more to teach us. So I think digging into what they have learned over the years is an important continuation of this journey.
Yeah. So listeners, stay tuned because we will return at some point. So I think we'll wrap this one up for tonight. I am Jajim. Thank you, John Shi, Kartan.